So, Earth. Try to drive home how the Earth starts the process and how the process isn't completed until something happens on the Earth. That was the point of what we've been doing. And also on at the very beginning of the process, it looks like a very personal issue you're dealing with, but you see, if you stick with it, if you go deep enough, how your personal process and the larger social process really do converge.
Did you say that Earth is, you're referring to the Earth as unconscious?
That's the way she's taking it here. What we're going to be seeing is the Earth equals a bunch of different things, and I'm just trying to bring some order into it. One of the things the Earth equals is the unconscious. And the unconscious in the sense of the unconscious nature of the difficulty of the emotional situation you get caught in at the beginning. Unconscious and Earth in the sense of the unconscious self being made real in time and space at the end of the process. And we're going to be looking at many different things, what the Earth means. And, why? Because the Earth represents both the beginning and the end point, and from different points of view. And I'm trying to make this somewhat linear so that it doesn't get too confusing. And I just said the Earth equals unconscious as the first. But remembering how broadly we have presented that whole discussion. Okay. The next one, bottom of 342. Man is ashes. I just skipped just a couple words in. Man is ashes. Into ashes shall he return. Such ashes that the philosophers ordained to be mixed with the permanent water, which is the ferment of gold. And their goal is the body, that is the earth, which Aristotle called the coagulant, since it coagulateth water. Talk about nonsense. I will try to explain that. The first thing I think to remember is the nature of the medieval mind. I think that helps. We think of ash as waste. But they think of ash as what remained after destruction. So for us, it's like garbage, but for them, it's indestructible. Particularly if you think that sometimes the substance that they were cooking may have liquefied and then congealed again in the ash as little balls, like little balls of glass or something. So they saw in that ash not just, you know, flaky powder, but often little hard substances, which to their mind were the indestructible essence of that substance remaining after destruction. So that is surprisingly how the unconscious uses ash. I think because so much of the unconscious was shaped by antiquity. Sometimes it can mean just what's left after a bad disaster in your life. Or it can mean that you have gone through a difficult period and the ash is the eternal part of yourself, the indestructible part of yourself that has survived that experience. And you could say, like, even, you know, in the farming sense, used as fertilizer. So that's part of the difficulty in understanding this section. Did they? Mm-hmm. I think you boil it or something, or, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, then in the life of the conqueror, it's refraining it until it causes it.
Yeah. My point is the unconscious uses very often as a positive image where we think of it as a negative image. I think that'll help you understand this passage. Because what she's going to be saying here is that the another meaning of earth is the mystery. And they get that out of the the enduring meaning of ash. Which the alchemist would know, but we wouldn't know. So, I'll read you. Yeah?
What comes to me is ashes, ashes, dust to dust.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the same idea.
Mm-hmm. Though I think there, isn't there a negative meaning to ash?
Well, I don't know. It's just that I've heard that at funerals or something.
That's biblical. I don't know.
Ash Wednesday. That's what they put on your forehead. Man, you are ash. To your dust, to dust you shall return. Yeah. Remember, man, that you are dust. Dust you shall return. In other words, you're...
I'm sure that's biblical, no? Does anyone know? Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure what they mean there, but here it's positive, whatever that may mean. Yeah. Okay. As the arche of all corporal things, the earth, in the symbolic sense of prima materia, we'll come back to that, is the basic substance of the human body, as the text says when it says man is ashes. Psychologically, I've skipped now about... not quite halfway down the page. Psychologically, we have to do, once again, with the unconscious in its somatic aspect, with its actualizing function. So now she's talking about the earth as the body. Do you want to try to put that in your own words already? It should be familiar by now. And you know, we talked about the earth as the unconscious, as the beginning state of this Sophia process. And now she's saying, well, that the body is the beginning state of all this, and we're really just saying the same thing in two different ways. Because what caused the mess on that earth? Your body's desires.
Begins and ends with the first.
Yeah, it begins and ends with the body's desires. The body can be understood as a symbol of the personality with its individual limits. So that what the text is saying in symbolic language is that the individual human being is the maturing ground and birthplace of the divine inner man, and that the specific qualities of the individual are the sole basis for the whole process of inner development. Now, put that in your own words.
Your specific mess is where you do your work.
And what causes your specific mess?
The call to consciousness?
Well, your desires. And what she's saying here is what we've been saying in other words, that the way the self comes to consciousness is to arrange a complicated situations in which you are crucified by your desires. See, it just looks like a love triangle, to take the dream that we went on. It just looks like you are beset with difficult emotions, difficult desires, and difficult feelings. But that itself is an arrangement of the self. And not only is it an arrangement of the self, is what she's trying to get at, it is the way that the self works today. So the body as the ground of the experience means that the self uses desirousness and your physiology to get something accomplished, namely the birth of consciousness and the birth of selfhood. So hopefully you're getting a sense that this ground is going to be different aspects of the basic nature of this experience. And it's going to be confusing, but if you can kind of, I think, keep little compartments, it makes a little bit more sense. So the body is the unconscious in the sense that this process starts with a complicated outer situation. That's the earthen unconscious aspect of it. There's an earthen body aspect of it, in that that mess that you were talking about is created by desire. And it's the desire that's trying to make you the birthplace of your own selfhood.
Your own what?
Selfhood. And then she goes on. I'll read you about another half of a paragraph. What unconscious nature? It's 10 lines up. What unconscious nature? Here she's quoting him. Was ultimately aiming at when she produced the image of the lapis. That would be the final self, right? Can be seen most clearly in the notion that it originated in matter and in man. Different words for what we've already been saying, right? That it was to be found everywhere, and that its fabrication lay at least potentially within man's reach. These qualities all reveal what were felt to be the defects in the Christ image at that time. And they are too rarefied for human needs, too great a remoteness, a place left vacant in the human heart. Interesting, we had the heart dream. Men felt the absence of the inner Christ who belonged to every man. Christ's spirituality was too high and man's naturalness was too low. See, what this is saying is that it's our naturalness which is the place where the Christ is experienced. In the image of Mercurius and the lapis, the flesh glorified itself in its own way. It would not transform itself into spirit, but on the contrary, fixed the spirit in stone. The image of the sun of the great world tells us from what source it was derived. It came not from the conscious mind of the individual, but from those border regions of the psyche that opened out into the mystery of cosmic matter. Now, mystery of cosmic matter, I would say mystery is another meaning of Earth. But how do we get to mystery all of a sudden? Can I use your pen?
Sure.
Yeah. How do we get to mystery?
Because it ultimately is all a mystery.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all looking for ways to make this connection, and the way I read this is that this is when the church began taking these fabulous symbolic images and literally putting them in stone, making mm-hmm. them doctrines that no longer were nourishing. But originally they came from that cosmic, that border that borders on them.
Basically, we can't explain what's going on. The existence of selfhood is a mystery. The mechanism by which the self is realized, we can't explain. We can't explain what's the nature of reality that Pegasus truck drove by twice. We can't explain that what's the nature of reality that the person she meets who will help her is interested in the very same theme that's in her unconscious. And that's what's being worked out in the material world through this starting and ending we've been talking about. So again, Earth is unconscious, Earth is body, and Earth is mystery. Saying the same thing a little bit farther down, last paragraph, another alchemical treatise is to earth or ash is the most precious thing in a great mystery. And there I think you can see by what I started off with how that's thought to be a mystery. Again, nothing new, 345, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down. Ash is the indissoluble substrate of physical and psychic facts. So just another way of saying, ash is, did I say ash is? Ash is indissoluble substrate of physical and psychic facts. That another way to talk about the self is it's the eternal. It's what survives. Okay, the next point will be to anticipate the earth is the prima materia. I'm just warning you. And let's just look at three texts and then sum up what they say. Um, 345, it is the earth of the promised land wherein Hermes commanded his son to sow gold, that the living rains might ascend from it. I think that's enough. But because the idea is that you see something starts from it. And next passage, bottom of 345. And when the heat of that fire reaches the earth itself, the water is dissolved and becometh a boiling, that is, an evaporating vapor. Well, again, you've got the idea that something starts from the earth and rises. And afterwards returneth to its own former earthly form. Well, that's the idea of that homunculus is coming down. But for her purposes here, she wants to focus on the earth as starting point. I think that's enough there. And 348. Top of the page, therefore the earth remaineth forever, and the heavens are founded upon it. Again, a beginning point. So there are the three texts that she's going to be looking at to say the earth is the prima materia. And let's just look at a couple of her statements. 346. This passage shows that the secret earth is produced by a circulatory process. After being liquefied by fire and water, it evaporates and returns to its own former earthly form. So a starting point. And circulatory, does that make sense? How is this process circulatory? And what does that mean, if you put that in psychological
language?
And what is the starting point and the end point that's the same? But I mean psychologically speaking. Yeah. You start with, again, it's just another set of images for, you start with a difficult situation and you come back to the earth again that led to that difficult situation with a new selfhood. And it starts again and around. And the earth is the beginning point of that. An interesting phrase on 347, nine lines down. The elements here are by their very nature instruments for actualizing God's ideas in matter. What's that mean?
You get a battle of spirit and...
Yeah, what would God's ideas be? If you're using religious language, we'd say God's idea. If we were saying psychological, in a psychological language, the self's intent for your whole self to emerge. And what the self wants is for that identity of yours to play its role in the physical world. Bottom of the page, here, hence the mystic earth in the present parable is a product of the fixatio, the treasure house, a wisdom described in the preceding one, and paradoxically it is also the prima materia, a cosmic arche, which is the mother of the other elements. So it's the beginning state and it's the end state. It's the source of the process, and it's the place where the goal of the process wants to live. Can you see the difference between that and the Christian idea? See, this goes up, down. Christian idea goes down, up. Just the reverse. Well, yeah, it would be that old idea needs to be completed by its opposite, and that we're now in that time to complete it. Uh, 348. The preceding passages describe a process of sublimation which was compared to the ascent of a living rain. Afterwards, the product of distillate drops down to earth again. The heavens are poured out upon the earth and tell its glory. Nothing new, just the importance of the reality dimension of the experience occurring. Okay, so far, we're hearing the same thing again and again, just different angles. Next passage, 348. The deep is its clothing. Above it shall stand water, air, fire, and the birds of the air shall dwell therein. Watering it from the upper elements, that it may be filled with the fruit of their works. Let me read one more passage. Because in the center of the earth, the seven planets took root and left their virtues there. Wherefore in the earth is water germinating diverse kinds of colors and fruits, and producing bread and wine that cheereth the heart of man, and also bringing forth grass for cattle and herb for the service of men. What stage of the alchemical process are we talking about here, and why? Unio mentalis, unio corporalis, or unis mundus? Yeah, you see why? Because the thing is coming back to the earth. So the unconscious is generating these images, which, if you were able to hear them, would be to mean, take the experience that you have felt now into your life in a way that makes an emotional difference. That's summing up. Let me read you how she gets there. 348 in alchemy. Birds, or in the singular, the swan, goose, dove, raven, symbolize vapors, sublimated volatile substances, hence also spirits. And the birds watering the earth mean the same thing as the previous mentioned distillation of the heavens and the falling of rain. So this coming down and vivifying what was once separated from. So whereas in the unio mentalis, you still have the difficult affects, but you are able to think independently of them. You may feel one way, but you may recognize that feeling is not reliable. And you can't get rid of the feeling, but you're able to not let that feeling turn you into acting on the feeling. With the unio corporalis, you actually begin to feel differently. Insight penetrates back into the emotions, and they change.
No, it's in the, and I don't know how, where to refer to this, but the birds, like in spring, when the birds chirp and sing, that tone, that resonance, the vibration is what actually awakens the trees and the plants to respond. And this, to me, is saying that our unconscious is responding.
Yeah, think of down, up, down. Down, up, down. That's the point of this chapter. Down, up, down. And the up comes from the down, but it reconstitutes the down. So down is your starting, your ending point. And that paradoxical nature is what is evoking all of these different ways of trying to describe that process. And again, I think, why does the unconscious keep harping on it? Well, first of all, because he couldn't get it. And secondly, we are so ingrained to think that emotional complexity is wrong. Being in love with two women.
Yes.
That's wrong.
And that's a complexity?
Yeah!
I mean, I thought complexities might get more complex.
Can you think of something more complex?
Well, it depends on how you answer it.
How about loving two women and acting on it?
That's enough.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah, and Sophia experiences are mess experiences. And again, that is so counter to at least the traditional understanding of morality. That's why the images keep circling around the fact that the earth is sacred. The earth is sacred. The earth is the mystery. The earth is the beginning. The earth is the starting point, where when one naturally judges these things morally. I mean, I think it's impossible not to judge it morally. You can say, oh, I'm free, but we're all programmed by 2,000 years of Judeo-Christian morality.
Couldn't you also say it was something like a woman who had children who didn't want them?
Sure.
And left?
Yeah.
I mean, she, you know, who? What woman would leave her children?
Well, I just know somebody who did that. Left one day, woke up, three kids with the husband. She's gone.
That's a mess.
That's a mess.
And it may not be because she's in love with somebody else. She just desires something beyond what this mothering role or family role is going to put her in.
Well, I think for a mother to do that, there's got to be some real distortion somewhere. In this case, this woman was a victim of incest by her father. And one day she just left. I mean, I don't know her. I know the husband. Left three kids. Literally, one morning, she's gone.
That's how I have my five stepchildren. When the woman walked out.
Just walked out. See, these are the kind of emotions that this work is meant to address. How do you ever help anybody deal with that? Well, the faith that Jung has, I think, even empirically validated, is that if you go into that thing, there is a way out of the thing. And it very often takes this process. Of course, I certainly never wish this on anybody, and I would hate to say, oh, it shows it's a good thing. No. But that somehow these awful situations, which evoke awful emotions, don't have to be excluded. There is a way to let them speak to you. That might be a way to put it.
Does it have to be a mess?
No, it doesn't. But when it is a mess, this is what the Sophia experience is about. I mean, there is a way to grow, which is not the Sophia way. But the Sophia way is a paradigm for expressing that growth which can occur when there is a mess.
But most people wouldn't understand that.
Most people
wouldn't even think of that.
No, you wouldn't.
And when they were in that process.
Yeah. Yeah, there are many, I mean, maybe you know this, but there are many metaphors that Jung has worked with for growth. This is just one of them. But I think it's particularly important because we have so devaluated the complicated aspect of earthly living. And we've tried to cope with it morally, which may at sometimes be valid, but there is another way to cope with it, and that's this model. Did I read 349, the stage represents? No, I guess not. Second paragraph on 349, four lines down. Stage represents the reunion with the body.
No.
That's what we just said, right? Following the unio mentalis, which is discussed by Jung. So, you know, just for my own sanity, I do want to point out that at one point she said this chapter is about the unio unis mundus, and now she's saying it's about the unio corporalis. So she's saying it's a bunch of things, so we'll just have to live with that apparent multi-layered meaning of the earth. And so what I've tried to do is show you how, if you look at the earth in this way, it can be understood that way. If you look at the earth in this way, it can be understood that way. And they're all different dimensions of what happens when this experience starts to become real in time and space. The birds watering the earth symbolize the fertilizing effect, which the archetypes in their spiritual aspect have upon the reality-bound consciousness of the individual. So there I say the earth represents the unio mentalis. Okay, because in the center of the earth, 349, no, I read that already, sorry. This earth, I say, made the moon in its season when the sun arose, verily in the morning of the first day of the week, after the darkness which thou hast appointed therein before sunrise. She calls that an image of the cauda pavonis. Are you aware of the cauda pavonis? Peacock's tail. I don't know which is cauda and which is peacock's and which is tail. Do you know what's on?
Yeah,
cauda is tail. So pavonis is peacock. What's the peacock's tail? Symbolically.
Well, it belongs to Hera or Juno, the eyes. I don't know.
Yep. There are eyes on the tail. Well, it would be the feeling that goes along with the birth of the new consciousness. So it's, you see it mostly in dreams of rainbows and dreams of the colors at sunrise. And it would just show that all the things you've been through are going to bear fruit. And it usually is an anticipation of the change. middle of that page, 351. Seen in the context of Aurora as a whole, this recreation, the recreation because of the caught up Coronas. Other world signifies a restructuring of consciousness from the very depths after it had been annihilated by the invasion of the unconscious. The new nascent world of consciousness has, however, a different center. It is no longer the ego, but a figure which the text later calls Christ in the second Adam, that is, a symbol of the self. So nothing new there, just confirming what we've been laying out. We can go on to another bit, or you want to have questions? We have just about 5 minutes left. What would you feel like doing?
Gary,
yeah.
On page 350, about the first full paragraph, after all harmful admixtures come from the unconscious have been removed, the unconscious is more able to exert.
Where's that?
It's the first full
paragraph. Oh, yeah.
What purifying procedures are...
Basically, becoming aware of the shadow motivations. Does that make sense if I say it like that?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing where you've been irresponsible, knowing where you've been self-centered, knowing where you are doing this for prideful reasons. I think they'd be the three typical things that can get in the way. And the idea is that when the unconscious is negative and not helpful, it's because you are holding a correspondingly manipulative attitude vis-a-vis it. Now, that's not quite true. Because I think the unconscious can turn negative just because it feels like it. But most of the time, I think 90% of the time, when you feel you aren't getting anywhere, it's because you have a correspondingly unclear motivation, which doesn't allow the unconscious to show its helpful side. And you feel like life's against you, but what you don't realize is you're against you. Now, not all the time.
Because what I'm thinking, when you started this session out too, it sounded like you said the unconscious is going to go through the steps of growth even if you're not catching on to them.
Yeah, I could say that too.
And I could see both going on. And you really do need a distinguishing ability between both.
I think, you know, generally the biggest problem is that we just have trouble keeping up with that unconscious thing. And I think that's sort of what I was referring to, that it wants us to move forward, but it will always be a step ahead of us, sort of disregarding the struggle we're in to get the previous level, because it wants that next thing. But I think there's also a way that if you are malevolent towards life and towards yourself, the unconscious ceases to be reliable.
And it may give you what looks like a direction, and then you take it, and it's a disaster. Because it wants to destroy the phoniness that you begin the process with. But I think, you know, basically you can assume that process is trustworthy, basically. You know, just like you would in any relationship where you've begun to trust the person, you basically trust them. But you don't swallow everything they say. You do discern, even in the best relationships. Are they having a good day, bad day? Should I believe what they're saying about the situation? And I think the same is true of the unconscious, although there is a basic sense of trust. But like you will be suspicious of somebody who is malicious to you, once even, you will be continually suspicious. If you are malicious to the unconscious, it does the same thing to you. If you try to bamboozle it, just like a dog will run away, it runs away. Because it's nature, and it wants to survive. Whether you survive or not, it doesn't care about it anymore. It'll find somebody else that's interesting enough to survive. But basically, I think, basically you can feel it's an ally. With not being simplistic and thinking, you know, like you would even in a good relationship, that you just swallow everything that comes your way. You discern it. Is that heavy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This whole chapter is.
It is heavy, isn't it? You know why? Because it's about bringing it down to earth. Let me see. So where do we stop? We stopped about 351, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, we will pick up on 352. How we got? How many one? We got through what today? 10 pages. How many pages we have left in the book? 40 pages. And this is April, May. We'll probably have to go one or two times in the fall. Is that agreeable to everybody?
We had June 2nd as a question mark, so I didn't know if you wanted to go into June. Or...
It's up to you, folks. Okay. See how you feel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, could they say yes?
They say yes?
I would say no.
Okay, well, so we'll make June 2nd our last. We could conceivably get through it. Depends how fast we go. As you see, it does start to repeat, and then sometimes it's so confusing you got to grind to a halt. Then you can speed up and you grind to a halt. So I really can't predict, but we'll certainly get through. Certainly get through the rest of this chapter and get started on chapter 7. Because when we get to the end of chapter 7, we're done. Because we did who was Thomas Aquinas at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So all we have to do is go to page 404. Okay, see you in 2 minutes.